Chapter 5, Movie Night. Rosie had not been exaggerating. Jamie was so miserable, he wasn't even yelling, sulking, or harassing anyone. He stayed in his room and never came out. Timothy and Rosie had tried to cheer him up by bringing him a Girls Gone Wild DVD and some candy, but even this had done no good. Rosie knocked on his door at 6:45.
"What?"
snapped Jamie, answering in his red silk porn star bathrobe.
"You have got to get a new bathrobe," she replied, pushing past him. "Now get dressed. The movie and Charlie Brown special start in 30 minutes.
"Not going."
"Yes, you are."
"No, I'm not."
"Yes, you are."
"No, I'm not."
They glared at each other. Oh, if she could just beat him up like in the good old days, thought Rosie angrily.
"What do you care if I go anyway? If I stay, Dad'll come up and pound on me. Won't you enjoy that?"
Jamie barked.
"No," she snapped. "Everyone's had quite enough of you two and all that foolishness. If you want to get Shal and the quadruplets back, you've got to get yourself straightened out."
"Ha! She's in Kansas."
"So, do you not have enough money for a bloody plane ticket?"
"She doesn't want to see me."
"So she says. It doesn't matter. You show up at her doorstep, you tell her you love her, you tell her you love the kids, and you sit out in her yard until she comes out and talks to you. You win her over, you idiot."
"What do you care?"
shouted Jamie again, furious at the thought of flying off to Kansas, only to be humiliated by Shala and shot at by some gun-toting American father.
"I don't know," snapped Rosie. "I really do not. You're a great, sullen, whiny bore. But I suppose I can't help it since you're my stupid twin any more than I could stop worrying about Tim."
"All right, I know you howl me to death till I come."
He stomped off in a huff, but Rosie thought she had seen the ghost of a smile on his face. The movie room, with its enormous high-definition theater-sized screen, was a cozy place with large overstuffed red love seats scattered about and beanbag cushions on the floor for children or passed-out drunks. Elizabeth dragged Victor by the hand to the love seat closest to the front. She loved movie night, although she would never admit it, knowing it to be Quentin's idea. Henry and Kenny sprawled on beanbags, where they passed a bottle of vodka back and forth between them. Victor kept giving them longing glances. William was sitting on a love seat alone, and when Rosie went and sat beside him, there were a few whispered comments. Jamie came dragging in, and Timothy jumped up from the floor, very excited to see him out of his room.
"Come sit by me, Jamie," he begged.
"Oh, all right." No one could resist Timothy's pleading. "Don't be yapping the whole time," he added
in his surly fashion. Sir Richard and Lady Fanshawe took the seat behind them. There was one left in the back when Quentin and Solange arrived at precisely the same moment. Quentin had seen Solange twice in the last 4 days, both times when she had come to visit Parks in the hospital. She acted rather awkwardly around him and focused mainly on Parks. He didn't know if this was because she was embarrassed about what had once again almost happened. "It's because I'm a Cubs fan," he thought. "I'm cursed," and was regretting it, or because she still wanted it to happen and didn't know how she should behave. Solange gave him a tentative smile. Quentin raised an eyebrow and made a sweeping motion to offer her a seat. The lights were dimmed, and the servants brought out popcorn, candy, and soda, and a Christmas carol cranked up with old Scrooge counting his money and yelling at Bob Cratchit.
"Look, there's Quentin!"
hollered Victor. Someone always said this at the beginning of the movie.
"Yes, he's so terrible to his hired help,"
snapped Solange. Quentin, who loathed all public displays of affection, swiftly leaned over and kissed her.
"What was that for?"
she whispered archly and moved herself closer.
"Just for being you."
"Well, in that case,"
she kissed him back.
"Ew!"
Rosie had spied this and could not resist yelling across to Timothy and Jamie.
"Mom and Quentin are snogging on the couch!" "Oh, leave us alone,"
snapped Solange. She had been enjoying the kissing.
"Everyone, just watch the fucking movie!"
yelled Quentin. What in God's name had come over him?
"Look, it's Tiny Tim!"
Every year when Tiny Tim appeared, Timothy jumped up and began pretending to hop about on a crutch. Everyone shouted at him to sit down.
"Oh, I don't like this part."
Solange hid her eyes when the Ghost of Christmas Past came clanking onto the screen.
"Oh, a ghost! Jolly good, jolly good!"
Richard loved the ghosts. Everyone knew the lines of the movie. Favorite ones, or ones they found funny, were shouted out loud. Quentin and Solange's earlier behavior was forgotten, and even Jamie appeared to be enjoying himself. This was one of the few family traditions he remembered liking as a little boy. Scrooge's redemption of the Cratchit family was met with great applause. Elizabeth and Lady Fanshawe had their handkerchiefs out, but Richard had fallen asleep. Once the ghosts were gone, he lost interest. The Charlie Brown Christmas Story came on, and when Linus recited the Christmas story on stage, everyone in the audience spoke it reverently along with him.
"Are you crying?" whispered Quentin to Solange. She was so funny.
"Oh, it's so beautiful."
She turned and beamed at him. When the movie was over, Solange jumped up clapping. She gave Quentin an expectant look, obviously waiting for him to offer her some sort of invitation.
"Well," he told her lamely, "I have to go up to my office. Father Iorio is coming by."
"Whatever for?"
She was astonished and aggravated.
"I'll tell you later. I have to talk to him about it first."
Solange felt inexplicably annoyed and embarrassed. She did not like her company being dismissed, even for someone as likable as Father Iorio. She knew he and Quentin met sometimes. She suspected Quentin anonymously funded a lot of the charities at the church. But why would they be having a business meeting this late at night and this close to Christmas?
"Well, do whatever you want,"
she replied tartly. Would she ever get it through her head that men were only going to drive her insane?
"Solange."
"What?"
she snapped. "Can't I come by later?" He gave her a knowing look. "Don't we have some unfinished business to discuss?"
"That is all you want, to fuck me," thought Solange angrily. "I'm not getting my heart broken in pieces again, thank you very much."
"No! Timothy, it's time for bed."
She wheeled about and left the room quickly.
"No!"
Timothy, moaning, trotted behind. Rosie had also been crying during the Charlie Brown Christmas story. William thought this might just be his undoing. Finally, he couldn't help it and put his arm around her. She snuggled up to his side, pleased. She heard a couple of snickers from Henry and Victor, and Elizabeth gave her a disapproving glare, but nothing was said. They sat on the couch after everyone else had filed out. The servants came in and picked up rather quickly.
"I say, it's time to turn out the lights,"
snapped one of the crabby older women, who obviously still thought of Rosie as a child that should be in bed.
"We're fine, thank you," replied William shortly and gave her an evil look.
The woman backed out, muttering. Rosie giggled.
"Oh, that was good, that old battle-axe. Why don't they have some kind of dimmer lights in here or something?"
"Oh, I'm sure they do. Lumos."
The room was immediately bathed in a very soft golden glow. Rosie was startled.
"I've never seen those lights. We've been seeing movies in here all my life."
Quentin just put them in. He doesn't want everyone to know the password. I shouldn't have said it. Please don't tell him."
"Well, that's okay. I can't remember it anyway."
She gave him her intense, penetrating look. William stared back at her as if bewitched, and then leaned over and kissed her. He kept kissing her until Rosie was quite out of breath, and he was almost on top of her. He had some sort of aftershave on that smelled insanely good, and she decided he was going to be her boyfriend, no matter how strange he was. She slid herself down on the couch so she was positioned as provocatively as possible beneath him. She ran her fingers through his hair and began moaning.
"Rosie."
"What?"
They could barely gasp out the words.
"Remember, I told you I wasn't like the other guys who were just interested in one thing?"
He looked adorably woebegone, and very young.
"Yes?"
"Well, now I'm just thinking about the one thing."
"Good, so am I,"
she moaned again and kissed him some more. He pulled off her sweater and discovered she had a pale blue silk camisole beneath that left very little to the imagination.
"Rosie."
"What?"
Stop talking, she thought to herself. It was keeping him from kissing her, and there were many more places she wanted to be kissed.
It's just, well, I haven't ever."
He found he couldn't finish the sentence. He looked younger than ever.
"Oh, really?"
Rosie was momentarily stunned, and then she gave him her wicked grin.
"That's quite all right. I'll show you."
At that moment, Polly, who had been sitting complacently on the floor, jumped up and began barking loudly.
"Oh, what is it? Shut up!"
Rosie snapped at her. Polly kept barking, and then jumped up on the couch and took a bite out of William's leg.
"Damn it!"
William sat up, wincing. It had been a rather vicious bite.
"Oh, William, I'm so sorry! Oh, my God! She never bites anyone! Oh, we better call the doctor. It might need to be stitched up, or..."
"Oh, I don't need the doctor. I can take care of it myself," replied William sullenly. He was extremely annoyed.
"Oh, it's bleeding!"
Rosie jumped up and looked terrified. He did have a rather large, gaping laceration.
"I'm going to get Dr. O'Malley!"
And she rushed out of the room, pulling on her sweater as she went.
"I hate you!"
William, knowing this was quite childish, was unable to resist saying this, and he glared at the dog. Polly stared back at him.
"Wait a minute. Those beady black eyes.
I know who you are, William snarled at her suddenly. Don't you dare be yapping about this to the press. I swear I'll report you. Don't think I won't. You're not registered, the dog growled throatily. Maybe I don't deal with the ministry anymore, but my uncle certainly does. You know who he is, I suppose. He'll have you in Azkaban, you wicked...
The blood trailing down his leg was puddling on the floor, and the wound began throbbing very painfully. Without thinking, William carelessly shouted,
Episky!
He had always been good with healing spells. It was probably the only thing that had kept him alive over the years. Sure enough, the wound felt quite hot, then quite cold, and was instantly repaired. The dog yipped, and William stared at his leg in horror. Oh my God, what have I done? Rosie's coming back with the doctor. She's going to see. Hastily, he stood up so that his trouser leg covered the spot.
Here he is. He's really bad. You'll have to stitch it up.
Rosie and Dr. O'Malley burst into the room just as William stood to his feet.
It's fine. It doesn't need stitches. It'll heal itself.
I will be the judge of that, announced the doctor officiously, sat down his bag, and appeared ready to lift up William's trouser legs.
No, you won't. I said it was fine.
Without even another look at Rosie, William rushed out of the room.
This is the most ungrateful lot, began Dr. O'Malley as Rosie stamped her foot, furious.
What the fuck is wrong with him? It does need stitches. It was deep. It was bleeding. But he's being an ass, she screamed.
Well, as my patient has abruptly departed, I see my services are no longer needed, burst out Dr. O'Malley, and he stomped from the room.
Well, he's just mad at me because you... Well, you bit him, you...
Polly gave Rosie her most woe-begone expression and began licking her hands frantically.
Well, could have been more understanding. It wasn't like I didn't apologize and... I go to get the doctor and it was just an excuse to get away from me,
she finally wailed. Why do I find a guy that's cute and sweet and interested in me and he runs away from me? It's probably because I'm spoiled. I'm a brat just like Jamie. It's my temper. He probably thinks I'll be an old shrew like Aunt Elizabeth. Rosie scooped up Polly and, crying, made her way to the elevator. The new parish priest was a short fellow with curly black hair and a very pleasant manner. He was distinctly unpriest-like, which Quentin found most refreshing. He dressed in street clothes when not in the church, insisted that Quentin call him Peter, and enjoyed having brandy and cigars while they chatted. As Solange had suspected, Quentin did anonymously fund quite a bit of the church ministries. This was how they started meeting, but they had become friends, something Quentin still found hard to believe.
Peter, sorry it's so late. Weather bad?
No, perfect timing. Just got done with late mass. Nice light snow falling. Drove the old Jeep.
He plopped himself into his favorite armchair and Quentin poured him a brandy.
So what's up? Haven't heard from you in a while.
Now, I was at church last week. I know that. I'm talking about socially. Lots of Christmas activities here at the house.
Oh, this and that. My wife stabbed my valet and almost killed him. Now she's in the mental ward.
Peter sat up, spluttering on his brandy.
Lord, Quentin, can't you ever learn how to lead up to something? Well, I hate to waste your time.
But why?
Long story, full of sin and vice.
Well, those are usually the most interesting.
Peter smiled at him. Quentin was always amazed at how non-judgmental he was.
This one's depressing. To make a long story short, I want to get my marriage annulled.
Annulled?
Well, I believe that's what it's called, yes.
You realize if you're sarcastic to a priest, you'll go to hell.
Shut up, Peter.
Quentin chuckled and they lit up their cigars.
This may be a bit difficult, Quentin. Haven't you been married over 20 years and don't you have a child together?
We've been married 21 years and the child isn't Loretta's. She adopted one of her sister's twins and we've never slept together, so I think that meets criteria.
Peter gave him a puzzled look.
Never?
Never. And if you think I'd lie to a priest, you're wrong.
No, I know your words, good Quentin. Besides, it's just odd enough to be true. That's how everything is around here.
He said this in a rather delighted tone. Quentin had the distinct impression that the Mansionites amused him greatly.
So is there anyone that has any proof or can back up your story?
Well, I think Loretta would if you had to ask her. She'd be terrified to lie to a priest. Richard would vouch for me. I told him all about it way back then, and Victor as well, but if you want to interview him sober, you'll have to catch him before breakfast. Loretta had some kind of phobia about sex, or me, probably.
To be honest with you, Quentin, with the money you get to the parish, the bishop will sign anything you want. I don't like things done that way, but given that I believe you, I'm just going to write this up and I'll have a chat with Richard. He's certainly a respectable witness, and send it on to the bishop. I think it'll probably go through pretty quickly.
Excellent.
They were quiet for a moment. Peter did not know if Quentin wanted to discuss this further.
May I ask why you've stayed married to her this long?
You may. I suppose I felt guilty about having an affair.
Nope. Oops.
You may. I suppose I felt guilty about having married her in the first place when I didn't really love her. Then I had an affair with her sister, which ended badly, and I didn't care about marrying anyone else. So I just kept things as they were. I did Loretta a great disservice. I should have had it annulled within the year. She'd have gone on to marry someone more suited to her and had a happy life.
Have you asked her forgiveness? Quentin was startled. Every now and then Peter said something that sounded like a priest, but it always surprised him.
No. Why would I want to do that?
Well, you've always been the one to do the right thing.
Oh, it's not that. It just seems kind of pointless now.
Forgiveness is never pointless, Quentin. It's good for the soul. When we ask another person's pardon, we have the chance to wipe the slate clean, so to speak. Quentin mulled this over.
Well, you're the expert in these matters.
So you'll do it?
What, you want me to give you a confession?
No, I think you should write Loretta and ask her forgiveness.
She tried to kill my valet!
Didn't you say she wasn't in her right mind? Besides, one has nothing to do with the other. You're asking forgiveness for the things you've done that had affected her life. And after that, you need to ask God's forgiveness as well.
Like praying?
Quentin sounds so horrified at this thought that Peter threw back his head and laughed.
Yes, can you imagine?
Prayer is a great gift, Quentin. Don't be afraid to use it. And not just ask atonement for your wrongs. Don't you have anything you'd like to ask the Lord for?
A few things, I suppose.
Then ask him. You might be surprised when you get a response.
I think I'd be damn surprised, thought Quentin ruefully, but he wasn't going to contradict a priest, even one that was his friend.
I'll think about it. Great. And Quentin?
What?
I don't just do annulments, you know. I do weddings, too. And before Quentin could reply, he had darted out the door in his sprightly fashion.
What the hell did he mean by that? Thought Quentin, irritably.